you have met the Son, you have learned something about the Father. You may never have seen the Father in question face to face in your life, but if you have come to know His Son, you have come to know a great deal about that man.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast that you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
And again, good morning. The message this morning continues forward from the last time I preached from the Gospel according to John, the whole incident at the Pool of Bethesda, and I realize very well that I've managed to get a couple of weeks put in between, and so it's easy to forget, but at that time, Jesus had healed the man who was unable to get to the pool for the troubling of the waters, and he had done some other miracles before this, and there was such an impressive lesson to be learned there. The part of it that struck me was, it is the one who made me whole, who told me what to do, in that case, carry the cot, and how the man took grief for that. And how whatever grief we take is worth it if we are doing the will of the one that made us whole. And how in the big picture he asks of us so little compared to what he gives to us. But that was not the lesson that the Jewish authorities took from this incident. The lesson they took from this and previous incidents involving Jesus' display of miraculous power and wisdom was, you can't do that on the Sabbath. What's the matter with you? You can't heal people on the Sabbath, and he obviously can't carry his cot on the Sabbath like you told him to. What is wrong with you? We think you should be killed. Yeah, I see people going, it wasn't my idea, it was theirs. They thought he should be executed for his reckless Sabbath breaking. And Jesus compounded their negative opinion of him by saying, well, I see that you're very upset about my Sabbath practices, so let me tell you this. I'm the Son of God, equal to God himself. It's kind of like that song on the radio sometimes. How do you like me now? They didn't like him any better. In fact, it says that they set out all the more to kill him because he had piled on top of their troubles with his Sabbath practices this claim of equality with God. Jesus says, I am the Son of God, and I am here on behalf of my dad, that's God, carrying out my dad's, that's God's, agenda. He is the Father. I am the Son. He said more than that. But that was plainly enough to inflame the passions of the Jewish authorities to fever. I think about the relationship between God and his Son, Jesus Christ. And the best way to understand it is, of course, the mirror relationship that God gives human fathers with their children. That is the point, and I'll come back to that in a little bit. You know, I think of my dad. And several things came to mind illustrating the kind of point that I wanted to make, but I'll give you just one. On a long ago trip down to the Indian reservations, those of us who went stopped briefly, and there I think Russ Thorne may be the only person here this morning who was along at the time, but somewhere in Missouri, I think, at some McDonald's or something, we got out and there was a little tree, scrubby thing that had grown up at the edge of the parking lot. And some folks know that I pay attention to trees and I'm always into identifying trees, and they didn't know what that tree was, and they asked me, what is that tree? So I looked at it and I said, it's Chinese mulberry. And begged the question, which they asked, well, what's a Chinese mulberry doing right here in the middle of Missouri at the McDonald's parking lot? And I said, well, back in the 30s and 40s and a little bit in the 50s, some people in America thought they were going to get rich raising silkworms. They were starting silk ranches, trying to move the silk trade into the United States. And in China, the silkworms mostly eat the leaves of the Chinese mulberry tree. And so these people who planned on becoming silk millionaires imported and planted groves of Chinese mulberry trees. But the trees got loose. And that was the question. Well, how do trees get loose? And I said, well, the birds ate the berries and then they fly. And when they pass over the McDonald's parking lot, they... And the person asking the question said, all right, you've got to stop right now and tell me how you know this. And I thought about it. How did I know this? I'll tell you exactly how I know it. My dad told me. My dad, who loved trees, who taught me to identify trees, who lived through that period where the people were trying to start up the silk industry and knew why the Chinese mulberry tree had come to the United States and how and when. My dad told me these things. And then I get to thinking about it and I realize that there is probably not one day of my life in which I do not apply some bit of knowledge imparted to me by my father, in which I do not exercise some bit of strength imparted to me by my father, in which I do not draw on some pool of virtue imparted to me by my father. Many of you never met my dad. He's gone now. And some of you have met him. And some of you actually know him a little bit. Many of you never met him, but I will tell you this, if you know me, you know a great deal about him. Because much of him resides in me. And then I thought about myself and my own sons, and they're both right here today, Caleb and Andrew. And I don't know that they will object to this, but I'm going to say it anyway. There are some ways in which they are very much like me. Caleb is looking at me, well, if you say so, okay. There are some ways in which they are very much like me. They enjoy music in the way I enjoy music. They enjoy playing stringed instruments in the way that I enjoy playing them. They both enjoy a rousing theological discussion. Michael always thinks that we're fighting. She calls our discussions bare-knuckle brawls, and they're not. We're enjoying a rousing theological discussion, even where we have points of disagreement. It's good to talk about these things. And then I thought of something else. By the way, I don't know, but I think if you've ever heard either of my sons preach, that they borrow just a little bit from my style and one thing and another. But how many of you were out for the murder mystery dinner theater that we had a month or so ago? A few. If you were there, you saw that I played an aging, washed-up Vegas lounge singer named Shecky Scagnetti. And I had a lot of fun doing that role, got into it, carried it, probably my fellow cast members thought, maybe just a little too far at points. But I had a lot of fun with that role. But here's the point. Mrs. Bushy was at one of the performances, and she came to me afterward, and she said, you know, I had both your boys, and watching you tonight explains a lot. She said... There's more than one way to take it. But what I will draw from it is this. If you know the Son, you know a great deal about the Father. If you have met the Son, You have learned something about the Father. You may never have seen the Father in question face to face in your life, but if you have come to know His Son, you have come to know a great deal about that man. Now, I realize that this is a human principle, and it is not always in the positive sense true about human beings. Jesus is drawing on this, but there are exceptions. There are times and places when the Son has no interest in the interests and the agenda in the business of the Father and goes off in some other direction and refuses to learn anything. And maybe the Father is something of a skunk himself and not worth admiring or imitating. And these things happen and there are breaks. But the human relationship, father and children, should reflect the real relationship between God the Father and Jesus Christ, His Son. There is the real dynamic put there for us to which we are to aspire. And it works well enough even in our imperfect fallen state that this positive correlation that Jesus is drawing on between fathers and sons is instinctively understandable to us. And of that perfect relationship, Jesus says, the Father shows the Son all things that He is doing, includes the Son on every element of His plan and His strategy and the import of every act He is taking, excludes the Son from nothing, shows Him all things. Well, of course He would. In the perfect relationship, the Father would not withhold important information from the Son, would not steer the Son in any way that did not lead toward success, both for Him and for their mutual agenda. The Father would show the Son all things. What God knows, Jesus knows. What God plans, Jesus is in on and helps to execute. The Father, Jesus says, commits judgment to the Son. In this special case, God and Jesus commits all judgment to the Son. All judgment of all people resides in the person of Jesus Christ. The Father has placed such judgment in His hands. And Jesus says, the Father speaks through the Son. When Jesus Christ talks, do you know who you're hearing? God. It is clear enough when Jesus says in a little separate verse, when you have seen Me, you have seen the Father who sent Me, because the Father shows the Son everything that He is doing. And the Father commits to the Son all judgment so that the Son may act as His final agent. And the Father speaks through the Son. You know, when our boys were younger, they were frequently mistaken for me when they answered the telephone, because our voices are at least a little similar. There have been several occasions where they were on the phone for a little bit saying, yes, but, well, okay, I think you want to talk to my dad. But when you talk to Jesus Christ, you are talking to His Father. The Father speaks through the Son. I thought about juggling my sermon schedule to try to get this on Father's Day, and I realized two things. One, I've juggled my schedule so frequently that I'm tired of juggling lately. And second, I'm not going to be here on Father's Day. Eric can steal everything he wants. It's all right, because I will be on vacation at that time. I think, am I wrong about that? I will be here on Father's Day? No, the 16th. Father's Day is 16th. Next week is not Father's Day. No, it's not. No. I don't think so. Doesn't matter. I'm not preaching this sermon on Father's Day, however that works out. Decision made, water under the bridge. But what I want to get from it is this. All men. Wait, say that louder. Would you like a microphone? Okay. All men who value the goodwill of the Father must honor the Son. I'm going to tell you something. It would be very difficult for me if you were to purposely injure my children and yet expect my goodwill. That would be hard. It would be easy for me if you were to be kind and helpful to my children, for me to have goodwill towards you. It is natural. Everybody understands this. And I understand about God's grace, and I understand about the death of Jesus Christ and his plan, and I get all that. But I'm telling you, the day is coming. And all those who value the goodwill of the Father must honor the Son. Do we value his goodwill? How important to us is it? Jesus had one more thing to say on this subject. Speaking to those Jewish authorities who were out to murder him, first for his Sabbath practices and now for his having claimed sonship and equality with God, he said, God is going to show you greater works than these you have been seeing, healing lame men, healing blind men, sending lepers home pure, these things that I've done that you're so upset about. God is going to show you greater works than these that you have seen, so that you may be amazed, because God can raise the dead, he said. I did this exercise for the scripture search in the newsletter just recently. I'd counted them up, and I believe that I'm correct on this, excluding the resurrection of Jesus Christ, because that seems to me to be a special case, excluding the resurrection of the Jerusalem saints who testified on and about the time of Jesus' crucifixion, resurrection, because there's not a number put to those that I can count. Old Testament, New Testament, all combined. 8 people have been resurrected from the dead. 8. You can count. Maybe you'll come up with a different number. This has nothing to do with anything but the general theme, but I did read this. I'll pass it along now. A bunch of fathers waiting while their wives were doing the difficult work of having babies, and the doctor comes in and he says to Mr. Smith, he says, "You're the father of twins." And Mr. Smith says, "Well, that's interesting, because I work for the Minnesota Twins." "Well, okay." Doctor comes back in a little bit and he says to Mr. Jones, "You're the father of triplets." And Mr. Jones says, "What do you know? I work for 3M. The doctor comes back in a little bit to talk to Mr. Harrison and says, "Mr. Harrison, you're the father of quadruplets." And he says, "You're not going to believe this, but I work for the Four Seasons Hotel." And the last man in the room started crying. He said, "What's the matter with you?" He said, "I work for Motel 8. Eight people 8 people God raised from the dead. It's not something that he does willy-nilly, but 8. God can raise the dead. And you want to murder me. And Jesus knew that they would succeed in their plot. And God is going to do a greater work yet than you have seen, so that you will be amazed. Oh, what could he have been talking about? I don't know. Maybe that God would raise Jesus Christ from the dead. And then go one step further. The Father will impart to the Son the ability and the right to raise whomsoever he will. And who would Jesus raise? Verily, I say to you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath everlasting life, and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life. I'm asking you again, how important is it for us to secure the goodwill of God by honoring his Son, Jesus Christ? For into his hands all judgment is passed. And we must die, but he will raise whom he will. I'm going to tell you my plan for getting into heaven. It's a simple plan. I do not plan into getting into heaven based on my works, though I try to work hard. I do not plan on getting into heaven based on my purity. I know better. I do not plan in getting into heaven based on my wisdom or on my righteousness. Here is my plan. I will get into heaven because I am personal friends with the boss's son. And I plan to trade shamelessly on that relationship because it is my only hope. It is all my hope to secure the goodwill of the Father by honoring the Son. If that is not your hope, let me encourage you to make it so.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.